to have a bit of chat with Chris because he has trouble speaking. And some of the questions I have been contributed by yourselves. So some of the questions are from the audience. I think we should start at the really obvious place. If we could take you back, Chris, to an hour and a half or so as you're walking along that grill to the space. The space vehicle is about to take. You just mentioned in passing that you're scared of heights. did anyone think what?
I think everybody should be afraid of heights. Heights will kill you. I'll be afraid of heights. Did you notice through the whole presentation I stayed well back from the edge?
Is that the only thing you're scared of, or that's just the odyssey? Well, the space odysseys.
Nobody likes a terrified astronaut. They would prefer that we're not petrified sitting in our spaceship. But so heights. If I stand on the edge of a cliff and look straight down, my legs feel like they belong to somebody else, and my whole guts go to liquid. And I just have this horrible yawning feeling of falling. It's a terrible primal fear, but it's a good one. I'm also afraid of charging rhinoceroses. I think I should be afraid of that.
Yeah, but you're not going to have with what you're going to have. You do 25,000 times around.
If I am standing on the edge of a cliff wearing an extremely robust harness that is bolted to the cliff with a huge eye bolt that I know cannot fall, and I've tested it and I know for sure I can't fall, then I'm no longer afraid. And that's the difference, is the difference between raw, unanswered fear and understanding the true danger. And once you truly look and say, what's the actual thing I'm afraid of? I'm not afraid of heights. I'm afraid of smucking into the ground. And if I know for sure that it's physically impossible, even despite the height, for me to fall and hit the ground, then the fear goes away. And if it doesn't go away right away, then attach that system and stand there for a while and try it and prove to yourself when it's safe that you can't be hurt. And then if you repeat it enough times, you change your chihuahua or your caveman reaction, and the fear goes away. And that's the only way you could ever ride a rocket ship.
You learned these techniques, and this is the book, which has got Chris on the cover looking like we expect, except he's on a skateboarder. I don't believe that. But everything else seems to be true. You say that
the skateboard was the publisher's idea. It wasn't my idea.
I wasn't destined to be an astronaut. I had to turn myself into one. Now, we've heard it was that, is it the 20th of July, 1969, which many of us here, I'm sure, can remember, when you went across the cornfields to someone else's television set to watch Buzz and Neil come down. How do you do that? How do you make yourself an astronaut? This was a time when the Canada Union had a space agency. They didn't even get and Americans were the only people allowed into space.
Right. The day that Neil and Buzz walked on the moon, I was about to turn 10. I was a month shy of 10. And in order to fly in space, you had to be a Soviet cosmonaut or an American astronaut. And I was a little Canadian kid, with a bad haircut. There was no way. But even then, I recognize that I can't change the world space program. I can't dictate Canadian space policy. All I can really change is myself.
That's the one thing I truly have decision-making authority over, is what am I going to do next? And it wasn't clearly laid out in my mind, but it was more just a resolution of, okay, if I'm going to be Neil Armstrong, then what will I do next? What is the right thing to do? What do I eat? What do I read?
So what did you eat?
What do I eat? Well, you have to fit in your spacesuit, and there are no, big fat astronauts, so it's like, keep yourself in shape.
Even when you were 10, you're watching what you ate.
Well, just thinking about it. Choose what you're going to put in your mouth. It seems sort of logical, really. And just deciding, should I
sounds cool. Maybe I'll be a pilot. I'll be a scuba diver. I'll do some fun and interesting things and see where life takes me.
And through a combination of years of self-modification and a lot of luck and timing, I had a chance to fly space 3 times.
You're passing quickly because, of course, we are all here for the space bit of the story, but I think one of the things you've made really clear in the book is that it is a flying job. I think a lot of us think of, you know, and in fact, it looked a bit like that on the slides. You know, you get in there, you get, and you go up, but it's a flying job. You're actually driving that aircraft. And so, of course, you became a pilot. But the standout job was when you were a fighter, you were a test pilot, and you flew F-18s. Your job was completely out of control of the government section.
Explain.
It was a hell of a job.
So, I was an F-18 test pilot, sorry, 97 so long. And in the Navy and in the Marine Corps and in the Australian Air Force and in Canadian Air Force where we fly F-18s, we were crashing them, especially the two-seaters, and we didn't understand why. And the airplane would get out of control, and the guys would go all the way down, never get under control, and crash. And we're losing airplanes and killing people. And so I thought, as a test pilot, maybe we could figure out some better way to get the airplane back under control. And so I had to talk to the Navy, convince the U.S. I was a test pilot on exchange with the U.S. Navy, convince them that maybe we could do this safely, and look at all the data, try and come up with some techniques to get it back under control, practice it in the simulator over and over and over and over again, until finally the Navy gave us an airplane to go do this. And finally the day came, I was the guy who had come up with the idea, so I got in the airplane and I took it up to 35,000 feet, and now is the day where I'm going to put this airplane deliberately out of control and work on new techniques to get it back under control again. So I'm sitting up there having a little briefing with myself, going, okay, big talker, here's your chance, you know, and so an F-18, if you push forward on the stick so that it's just sort of almost zero G in the cockpit, and then stand on the rudder, the airplane will unload, start to turn sideways, and then go, whoop, foot, and away to the races within 3 or 4 seconds. Very predictable. And so my first one, I unloaded the airplane, pushed on the thing, the airplane started to come, and I'm like, oh, everything, the airplane recovered, and I was like, okay, I won't sit there. So then I tried it again. At the end of it, it was like we'd been taking drugs. I mean, we were just unloading and stepping on the airplane and whip all over the sky. At one point, we fell 2 miles as the airplane was tumbling around. One of the sideways forces, my hand went bang into the throttles, and I cut my hand. I mean, it was just because we gained confidence that the techniques we had would get the airplane back under control again. And at the end of it, we came up with a really simple way and rewrote the book and actually changed the flight control laws of the F-18 so that now it doesn't go out of control nearly as well. And we went around and taught all the different squadrons how to change their behaviors so that they could fly the airplane better. And we didn't die, which was good. And we made the airplane better for everybody who's flown it ever since. So it was a lot of fun.
And they were so dazzled, the Canadians, that in 1991, I think it was, the Canadian Space Agency, which existed by then, put out an ad, wanted astronauts.
Yeah, in the want ads. That's right. Well, you open up the newspaper, you know, there's accountants, you know, what else comes in the alphabet? Accountants.
Out of the garage.
Yeah. and then astronaut.
is that you're competent, that you have done all the work on your own, and you can carry the weight. And when I worked in mission control for 25 shuttle flights in a row, and I'm not used to being the stupidest guy in the room, but in that place, every single console in mission control, that person knew more about their, like the electrical system or the mechanical system or the navigation system. They knew more about that than anybody on Earth, and they were constantly hungry to learn more. It was the most mentally stimulating and challenging place I've ever worked, and nobody cared. Where they were from or what their beliefs were or whatever, what mattered was that they were really good at what we needed them for. And there are some politics, and it's an international program, so, there's always that layer of whose turn is it. But what really mattered always was being trusted to do something that is